This is Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Time now for our Food Friday segment.
Well, tis the season to put on a sweater and start baking stuff. And just in case you need some new ideas for what to do with all of those apples and pears and pumpkins and other fall goodies, we've got farm-to-table chef Ian Knauer on hand now.
Ian is the host of a new PBS series that's called The Farm. He's got a cookbook out by the same name. Ian, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me back.
All right. Now, some people are bummed. You know, days are getting shorter. Winter's on the way. Baking in the fall, though, that's the perfect antidote. Are you excited about the changing season as a cook?
This is my favorite time of year to cook in general. You have the height of produce because you've been waiting all summer for things like collard greens and broccoli and apples and pears and quince and pumpkin and butternut squash. And now it's here, finally. And it's just so much fun to go into the kitchen with all that stuff.
And for some reason, I also feel like in the fall, you get a little bit of a free ride with desserts. I feel like, well, it's fall. You have to eat desserts because there's things like apple for crisp and there's pumpkin pie. I don't know. Is this a good baking season to you, too?
This is the time to get back into the kitchen and turn that oven back on. You know, it's a little cooler, so you don't have to sweat yourself out of the kitchen. And you mentioned sweaters. Sweaters are like my favorite article of clothing. So in general, I'm really excited that it's fall. But yeah, it's true. I mean, when you get into February, you eat chocolate, and that always is sort of a guilty pleasure for a lot of people. But this time of year, you can sort of write it off because you're eating a lot of fruit-based things. So you have your apple pies and your pear pies and even your winter squashes. You know, they're actually quite good for you.
So you can
justify it that way.
Well, of course, we've got apples all over the place right now in Wisconsin. Now, what are some of your favorite things to bake with apples nowadays?
One of my favorite pie, you could call it pie, it's actually more of like a crostata or an open-faced tart, is a combination of apples, pears, and quince. Now, quince, of course, they sort of look like a yellow apple, but they're totally inedible unless you cook them. I mean, if you tried to eat one ever, it would dry your mouth out like a super dry wine. It's so tannic. But when you cook with them, they become almost like this sweet honey flavor. They're quite soft. And to combine them with apples and with pears, I think you get a really interesting combination. So I like to take a tart apple, some quince, and some sweet pears, toss them all together because then you get a nice balance of fruit. And then just put them on a basic pastry dough, like a pie dough, that I roll out flat. I mound the fruit with a little bit of sugar and some lemon juice right in the center, and then I just fold the edges up over the edge of the fruit. So it's not a covered pie, and it's actually much simpler than sort of transferring your pie dough all over the kitchen and having it fall apart and that sort of thing.
So it's like a rustic kind of pie, rustic.
Exactly. Mess. Yeah.
Well,
right.
I'm just curious about the quince, how you prepare those, because I've had quince jelly, but I can't bring to mind what an actual quince looks like or how you would prepare it.
Well, so when it's uncooked, when it's coming off the tree, they're actually sort of more like bushes than trees. It looks kind of like a fat pear, and it's yellow when it's ripe. It has a little nub on top, so that's how you recognize it if you see it at the farmer's market. When you cook with it, you can cook with it like a pear or an apple. So you would want to peel it and then take the seeds out. There's a little core in there. So take the core out, and then I just dice it into like 1-inch chunks and keep it simple. And then I toss those with the rest of my pie ingredients, for instance. Now, if you wanted to make a quince paste, you would sort of do it like you would make an applesauce. So you would, again, you peel it and take the seeds out, and then you would just cook it down slowly, you know, stirring so it doesn't burn on the bottom until it starts to fall apart. And then you would continue to cook it until you get the consistency that you're looking for. And then you can keep going and keep cooking it, and you end up with what's called membrilla, which is this really lovely quince jelly almost. It has a lot of natural pectin in it. So once that quince jelly is cooled, it almost becomes like a jelly candy. It's really good when you serve it with some salty cheese.
Nice.
All right. Now, Ian, I may have mentioned to you before on the air, I'm a very, very lazy cook. I tend to go for the crisp family of desserts because there's no rolling or any of that annoying stuff. You just throw stuff in, throw other stuff on top of it, and then bake it, and you're good. Do you have any tips on making crisp, you know, a little better than ordinary?
Yes, and I'm right there with you. I think that, you know, the less time that you can spend, you know, hunkered over the stove, the better, the more time you can spend with your guests and your family actually eating. So crisps are one of my favorite things, too. And the crisp topping that I make is quite simple, but it has a lot of variations to it. So basically, it's some room temperature butter, some flour, and some oatmeal, and a little brown sugar. And that all gets mixed together with your hands until it forms sort of like a crumbly paste. And then that you can just sort of crumble and sprinkle over your fruit. Now, if you want to get a little creative with that, you can use something other than oatmeal. So I've used quinoa. You can use basically any other grain as long as it's a small grain and will cook quickly. And it gives you a really interesting sort of nutty, crunchy, different take on that crumble.
Well, that sounds interesting. Yeah. Quinoa on crisp. That's something I never would have thought of. Well, then it's practically a health food.
Yeah. I'm a little worried. I'm not sure I buy this.
It still has some butter in it.
All right.
Well, I want to ask you about the recipe you gave us, and it is a ginger pear tart. Now, this is a recipe that people can have if they make a pledge of any amount this hour. And so tell us a little bit about that ginger pear tart.
So this is also one of my go-to recipes because it's such a wow factor. So it's a tart de tan. It's cooked upside down in a nonstick skillet, or even better, a cast iron skillet if you have one. And you make a little caramel in there, and then I add some fresh ginger, which gives it a nice punch, and my fruit. And so in this case, it's apples, but you can use pears in this too. You have the fruit, you peel it, and you take the seeds out, and then you put the fruit on the caramel, and then you cover it with a pastry. So you can make your own pie pastry, or you can buy like a puff pastry is really good on this, and just roll it out to fit the skillet and then tuck it in around the fruit. And then that whole thing goes in the oven. And what happens in the oven is the apples cook and their juices come out and they mix with that caramel that you made in the pan, and the pastry gets crisp on top. So then you take it out of the oven, let it cool for just a couple minutes, and then invert the whole thing onto a serving platter or a cutting board. And the caramel just drips down over those apples onto the crust. This is a really, actually really simple, but impressive dessert. And, of course, you know, serve it with some vanilla ice cream and everybody's happy.
We got to stop doing these food shows. Of course, I'm hungry now. just as a reminder, you can get that recipe and six others in our thank you gift, the Food Friday Recipes, with a pledge of any amount. WPR.org is a place you can do that, or you can call 888-202-2552.
I love the idea of using ginger with fruit. I love cooking with ginger, but I hadn't thought about, you know, putting it with these traditional fall baking recipes. Yeah. Are there other fruits that it lends itself well to?
Oh, ginger. Oh, I put ginger in just about everything. And we're talking about fresh ginger here. Now, ground ginger, dried ginger, is a pretty common pie spice or pretty common cookie spice. But when you add some freshly grated ginger, it totally elevates the dish to something that's completely different. Gives you a much more interesting flavor. Now, I mean, I'll serve it with strawberries in the summer, so I'll macerate some strawberries with some sugar, maybe a little booze in there to suck out the juices of the strawberry, and sprinkle that with some fresh ginger, and you've got something that's really incredible. It doesn't take much. I mean, it's just that one extra ingredient that really makes a difference.
We're talking with Ian Knauer. He's the host of a new PBS series called The Farm. He's got a cookbook out by that name. We'll get back to talk more fall baking after the news. And remember, you can pledge. We're kicking off a pledge drive, our first one ever on Central Time. Pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And if that tart recipe has got you hungry, you can fix that pretty quickly by making a pledge, and we'll send you that recipe as a thank you gift. 888-202-2552. This is Central Time on Wisconsin Public Radio.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
I'm Veronica Rickert, and we're picking up our conversation now with Chef Ian Knauer. He runs a family farm in Pennsylvania, and he cooks with what he grows there.
He's got a new PBS series. It's called The Farm, a cookbook by the same name. And we're going to pick up our conversation now about fall baking. He's giving us lots of great tips. We were talking apples, pears, a little bit of ginger in there. Ian, my favorite part of the season is the squash. Can you talk about what we can bake with the squash?
I love squash, and not just pumpkins, but butternut is great for baking. And then if you follow that through to other orangey, delicious things, sweet potatoes are one of my favorite pies. You can roast them, mash them, and use them just like you would use pumpkin in a pumpkin pie, or one of my favorite desserts with either pumpkin or sweet potato or pureed butternut squash is a bread pudding. And so I like to whisk the, let's say, pumpkin puree in with some a little bit of heavy cream and some eggs, and then toss in some old stale bread with that, a little bit of sugar, and drizzle the whole thing with butter and throw it in the oven. And it becomes one of the most incredible and super simple desserts this time of year.
So the old stale bread, that's the part that's going to soak up all the custardy goodness, right?
Exactly. And what happens is it gets nice and crispy on top from that butter that you've drizzled on it. But the bottom of this thing actually turns into like a custard. I mean, you can't even tell that it's bread. It just becomes something totally different.
Wow.
That sounds pretty good.
Ian, tell me more about this sweet potato pie. I love sweet potatoes. The concept of the pie sounds great. And no one else in my family likes sweet potatoes, so I don't have to share it. What is the key to a good sweet potato pie?
Well, you're definitely going to have to share it because the best pumpkin pie I've ever had is a sweet potato pie.
Really?
Sweet potato has just this natural, not only sweetness, obviously, but almost like a caramel flavor to it, and especially when you roast them. So what I like to do is I like to prick the potatoes with a fork, roast them in the oven until they're nice and tender. So you can just put a little bit of pressure with a paring knife on them, and it goes right through. That's how you tell that they're done. Then I let them cool so I don't burn my hands, and then peel them and then mash them either with potato masher, or you can put them in the food processor too. That's easy. Unlike a white potato that will get really gluey in the food processor, the sweet potato doesn't have the same kind of starch in it. So you can just whiz them up and puree them. It's really simple. And then just follow your pumpkin pie recipe, your favorite pumpkin pie recipe, and substitute the mashed sweet potatoes for the pumpkin. And you'll end up with something that's a much prettier color because the orange is much more brilliant than pumpkin and has that sort of innate caramel sweetness that sweet potatoes have. Really, you're gonna make it and you're going to love it, but I can't promise that no one else is going to eat it, even if they don't like potatoes.
Well, for people who like pumpkins, I'm curious what you think. I probably know the answer, but is it worth it to make your own fresh pumpkin pie instead of using the canned stuff?
Yes.
I don't know if I wanted to hear that, but tell me why.
I mean, I've used the canned stuff in a pinch if I'm out of time. But the best thing to do is get a pumpkin this time of year, take the seeds out and peel it and cut it in chunks, and just put that pumpkin flesh in a big pot with a cup and a half of water and cook it covered until it's falling apart and tender, and then uncover it and just cook it down until it's the same texture as the stuff you get in the can. And then what I do is I freeze it in Ziploc bags. I put one cup of pumpkin puree in each Ziploc bag, and I put them all in the freezer. I stack them in the freezer so they're nice and neat. And then anytime I want to make a pie or cook anything with pumpkin, I'll take out as many bags as I need, and I just let them thaw at room temperature. The work is all done ahead. You can still bake on the fly if you want to. And you're going to end up with a pumpkin flavor that is just so much better than the stuff that you get in the can.
I just started doing that last year, preparing a bunch of pumpkin and squash, by the way, and freezing it in 1 or 2 cup increments. And I just finished off last fall's pumpkin with a couple loaves of pumpkin bread.
And you didn't bring them into work because why?
Because that's our staple food when I make those. My wife and I, they're breakfast and they're dessert.
Oh, okay.
It's kind of that great tween zone.
Well, so you guys are superior beings because you use fresh pumpkin. But what I want to know, what stops me from preparing pumpkin or squash sometimes is that I feel like it's hard to prepare, like even to get a knife through sometimes, like a butternut. Ian, do you have any tips for preparing before you cook it?
I do. My favorite way to get the skin off of a butternut is to use what's called a Y peeler. So that's a vegetable peeler that's in the shape of a Y instead of the one that's in the shape of, say, like a paring knife. So the Y peeler really works well on a butternut. It gives you much better leverage when you're peeling that skin off and actually makes it a really simple job. I've struggled so many times peeling butternut when I use the other kind of peeler, the long kind of peeler. But the Y peeler just makes it a breeze.
Okay.
Then I like to break it down into different parts. So sometimes butternut can be a little intimidating because it is sort of long and big, and you're right, it is hard to get a knife through, especially if you cut it lengthwise. But if you cut it crosswise first, you have much better leverage and you're dealing with smaller pieces. So I like to cut it in half crosswise, right where the bulb starts. So So you have the seeds on the bottom and the neck on the top. I just lop it right in half. And then from there, it's much easier to work with.
Speaking of things that are kind of a pain in the rear end to do, making your own pie crust. I tend to buy mine or cook around it, make a notch pie. If I was going to try to make my own crust, what's a good way to make it not too hard and not have it be an epic failure at the end of it?
So I think that the easiest way for people who are a little intimidated by pie crust, which is a really common thing, so don't feel ashamed about that, Rob.
I have been.
is to work with a food processor. So if you have a food processor at home, you want to put your flour, your butter, and your salt in there, and just pulse that until you get those pea-sized lumps that's written into every recipe. That's what you're looking for the butter size. So instead of using your hands to incorporate the butter, you run the risk of melting the butter, and then it starts to get sloppy, and then, you know, if you're intimidated already, it just makes it so much worse. So I would definitely recommend a food processor to get the butter in there. And then you can continue to use the food processor if you want. You can add the water in there and just pulse it until the dough comes together. If you do that, you get more of a sandy texture of the pastry, or you can dump that flour butter mixture into a bowl and then drizzle your water on, and then with a fork just gently stir it until it comes together. That way you'll get a really flaky texture. So depending on the outcome and what you're looking for with your pastry, you can either stop with the food processor at a certain point or continue with it.
All right, well, that doesn't sound too bad when you put it that way. Rob, will there be a pie in our future with a homemade crust?
Maybe. The problem is making pie crust scares me. The food processor also scares me a little. It's like sharp and it moves really fast,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, that's kind of the point of the food processor. But, all right.
Rob, I think you just need to get over your fear of baking and your life will be happier.
I agree.
Maybe so. Yeah,
and your office mates will be happier as well. So, you know, I want to talk to you about apple cake a little before we leave you. It's one of the sort of standards when apple season hits. What do you think makes a really good apple cake? What are some of your trade secrets?
My favorite apple cakes are made with oil instead of butter.
Why the oil?
When you have an oil cake, and specifically I like to use vegetable oil, but you could use mild olive oil in a cake like this too. It would be much healthier for you. Oil gives you a really moist cake. The texture of the cake is different than butter. You get sort of this, it's not spongy exactly, but it is really sort of delicate and falls apart. And I think it works really well with apples specifically. So the apple cake that I make is sort of a traditional bundt cake, and it's got a layer of apples in the middle and then a layer of apples on top with some cinnamon sugar. But the cake itself has oil in it instead of butter or lard or whatever you would want to use. So I would definitely recommend trying to find a recipe that is an oil cake when you're making your apple cake this year.
All right, Ian, before we let you go, what is your next baking project or experiment?
I know exactly what it's going to be. I am going to a local orchard in Pennsylvania where I live next weekend, and they are in the height of their apple season, and I'm going to make apple cheddar pizza, which I am really excited
about.
You're going to have to tell us a little more. Apple cheddar pizza?
Yeah, well, so apples and cheddar cheese are sort of this wonderful classic combination because you have the salty cheese and the sweet apple. You get the nice softness from the cheese and the crunch from the apple, so they're really fun to put in your mouth together. And, of course, pizza is also, you know, I've never had a bad one. Even bad pizza is good. So pizza is a really great foundation for these flavors, which are, you know, right at their height right now. So this is sort of a really well-balanced pizza. It's not a dessert. It's more of an appetizer or even a main course. But again, you get the nice sweetness and the tartness from the apple and then that salty, ooey goodness from the cheddar.
Sounds great. Ian, as always, thanks for joining us.
Always my pleasure.
That's Ian Knauer. He's the host of a new PBS series called The Farm.